Hugh and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast, recorded from our studio in the Bishopriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, Twitter or Instagram at Q and Review, that's @CUEANDREVIEW, or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qandreview.com, that's INFORMATION @CUEANDREVIEW.com, or by calling 0141 772 3976. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
Evening Times of Sport, October 24. Nick Rogers says, more battles to come, despite golf's uneasy truce. According to the good folk who cobble together the weird and wonderful observances that make up the official National Awareness Day calendar, you are now reading this column on World Tripe Day. It was nice of them to recognise my endeavours. Anyway, your correspondent has just returned from an enjoyable yet expensive break in London, which hit the wallet with the kind of destructive force you would get at a testing site for ballistic missiles. Nothing's cheap these days, is it? Even the word cheap is 3% more expensive than it was in the previous sentence. I picked up the tab for a fairly modest dinner one night and was convinced that the paper the bill was printed on must have been tailored on Savile Row. I mean, I'd only ordered a sharing platter of tripe, not a lazy Suzanne of assorted highfalutin delicacies that can be so posh they get served with their own monocles. Talking of eye-watering figures, the 2023 LIV Golf League drew to a close the other night, with Bryson DeChambeau's Crushers Golf Club, which also featured Paul Casey, Anirban Lahiri, and Charles Howell III, winning the team title and scooping the first prize of $14 million. Tripe all round to celebrate, fellas. The money-soaked meme feast in Miami brought the cutting down on LIV's second season. By all accounts, it's onwards and upwards next year, with the main movers and shakers involved in the breakaway circuit all talking with great optimism about the series going from strength to strength. But they would, wouldn't they? Phil Mickelson, a man who does so much LIV PR, he's actually morphing into a human press release, claimed more PGA Tour and DP World Tour players would be jumping on board the LIV gravy train. Bubba Watson, meanwhile, reckoned 10 to 20 investors had expressed an interest in buying his Range Goats team, while Greg Norman, the combative CEO of the LIV operation, spoke for the first time in months and was as bullish as well a bull at the height of the rutting season. While there is plenty of bombast from the LIV lot, the men's professional game as a whole at the top end remains mired in uncertainty as we inch towards the end of another golfing year of trials and tribulations. The proposed and highly controversial agreement between the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the Saudi Public Investment Fund, PIF, which bankrolls LIV, still needs to be finalised, if it ever will be, and continues to be as fiddly a process as trying to change one of those flush-mounted kitchen spotlights with oven gloves on. The PGA Tour wants to keep control of its product. The DP World Tour wants to fortify its own position. And the PIF wants a degree of influence and a return on its potentially mighty investment. All this sorted by an end-of-year deadline agreed by the three parties. Good luck. Perhaps it will all come out in the wash, and there will be an eventual cooperation. Or will the men seen in upper echelons just continue to muddle on in this somewhat awkward coexistence? The news the other week, meanwhile, that LIV had its application for official World Golf Ranking, OWGR, status, hurled in the bin again due to its failure to comply with various requirements, means its players without access to points continue to tumble down the global order. As it stands, only five LIV players, Brooks Koepka, Cameron Smith, Dustin Johnson, DeChambeau and Mickelson, are guaranteed places at all four majors in 2024. Taylor Gooch, who has won three times on the LIV series this season and is a highly polished performer, is not in any. Before joining the LIV Rebellion, Gooch was 31st in the world. Now he's 214th and plummeting like this scribe's bank account after three nights in London. The reality, of course, is that Gooch and others chose the LIV money, and lots of it, over the competitive legitimacy demanded by the OWGR. They knew what the price of their defections would be. Decisions have consequences. As you read this, you're possibly thinking, I haven't got the slightest bit of interest in all this LIV-related claptrap. I wouldn't blame you. You're probably aware that LIV exists, but that's no doubt down to the sheer volume of disruption it created, rather than any of the actual golf stories it has produced on the course. Money can buy many things, but it cannot buy widespread interest. For the time being, then, it's business and negotiations as usual in the divided world of the men's game. An uneasy truce may have been called, but there will be a few more battles to come yet. And another thing, it has been a terribly sad few days with the loss of Alan Brodie and Kevin McAlpine. The sudden passing of former Scottish amateur match play and stroke play champion McAlpine at just 39 was particularly desperate. Alan, who died at 76, was one of Scotland's finest amateur golfers and enjoyed a wonderful period of pomp in an age of great competition, characters and camaraderie. Kevin, the son of the celebrated Dundee United goalie Hamish, made his own name as a golfer before forging a successful career as a caddy. My condolences go out to Alan and Kevin's families and friends, says Nick Roger. Evening Times Sport, October 24. Doherty insists injuries will not hold Scotland back. Report by Alison McConnell. As Arsenal striker Vivian Miedema prepares to enhance the strength of the Netherlands ahead of their Nations League doubleheader against Scotland, the 27-year-old spent 11 months out with an ACL and is now back on the pitch. Pedro Martinez Loza's squad is shorn of its world-class talent through the same injury. The loss of Caroline Weir is difficult to ascertain, but the Real Madrid midfielder, who has just undergone surgery on a ruptured ACL, sustained in Scotland's draw against Belgium at Hampden earlier this month, leaves a gaping hole for Martinez Loza to fill. Add into the mix that emerging talent Emma Watson is also out with the same injury, while Erin Cuthbert, due to return for Friday's game after injury preventing her from featuring against England and Belgium, also picked up a niggle this weekend, and the magnitude of the task facing Scotland is apparent. Nicola Docherty, the Rangers and Scotland fullback, has maintained, however, that the burgeoning sense of conviction within the squad means they have no qualms about going into the games against the Dutch, regardless of who is handed a starting jersey. She said, "I think that England game shows how far we have come as a squad. From the outside, people maybe didn't think we could compete against England. But for us, certainly, we know we are capable of getting results. We want to go and push that now and get the result and the points that we need. We have played the Netherlands recently and narrowly lost. It will be tough and we respect all opponents, but we feel if we play to the best of our ability that we can beat anyone." Watson joined the squad for lunch as she returned among her international colleagues for the first time since her surgery, with Doherty believing that a result against Holland, who were World Cup quarter-finalists this summer, a fitting tribute to their injured teammates. And she said, "I think because of the amount of injuries that we have in the squad, there is a real desire to go and win these matches. It is almost as if we want to do it for the girls who are not here, because we are gutted that such key players are out of the squad. We want to make sure that we win these matches. We also want to do it for Scotland and for the fans and our families. But we are gutted for the girls who aren't here. So we want to make sure that we try and get a result and stay in League A. People will be speaking about the injuries that we have, but I feel that with the squad that we have got, there is enough depth there to cope with it." Cuthbert will miss Friday's game as she pulled up with a leg injury for Chelsea on Sunday, a further frustration for Martinez Loza. "She brings a tenacity, but I have always said to players like Kirsty MacLean, who I obviously know from club level, that if players get injured, then it is an opportunity to step up. It is not ideal. Erin is one of my closest friends in the Scotland squad, but there is a togetherness about us." Reports by Alison McConnell. Evening Times Sport, October 25. Documentary for BBC revisits Fergus McCann's famous Celtic takeover. Report by Aidan Smith. A new two-part documentary short will tell the story of how Canadian businessman Fergus McCann saved Celtic from going out of business ahead of the takeover's 30th anniversary next year. The first part, which features in this Friday's episode of BBC Scotland's A View from the Terrace, will explore the events that led to McCann's famous 1994 takeover. The episode, available on iPlayer from Friday evening, features an exclusive interview with David Lowe, an investment analyst who came up with the idea of trying to buy out the Celtic board of the early 1990s. Lowe, who personally approached and pitched the idea to McCann, acted as a broker to get the deal done and was in the room as the 24-hour deadline ticked away. He remains friends with Fergus McCann to this day. The founder of the Celts for Change movement, Matt McGlone, is also interviewed in a re-examination of the club's emergence from arguably the darkest period in its history. describing the time McGlone, who founded Celts for Change as the club was facing bankruptcy, said, "I put an advert in the newspaper and I said, if you care about the welfare of your club, turn up at the City Halls tomorrow night." And that was Celts for Change. We knew that to save the club, things had to change. We didn't have any money. All we could use was the tool of being fans. But the fans had the spirit, the tenacity, the drive, the will to win and to save the club from going under. Discussing his role in the deal, Lowe told the documentary, "I had two passions in life. One was music, one was Celtic. In the 1980s, money had come into the game for the first time. Celtic didn't have that. I was an investment manager, and my job was to ascertain what companies were good to invest in. Fergus McCann was described to me as a slightly eccentric, very determined guy, a Celtic fan from Canada, and I should go and meet him. The only person I met in this whole time that had a plan was Fergus McCann, and the fans pledged support for this plan." Describing the nail-biting negotiation that he brokered with McCann, Lowe said, "It's a game of poker going on here. They know that the game is up. It's just a matter of money now. You agree on a price and the deal is done." I always remember on the way out, Fergus said to Michael Kelly, "Goodbye, Mr. Kelly. I hope I never meet you again." In the late 1980s, the football world was changing. The game was becoming big business on and off the field, with Sky Sports launching in 1989 and the Champions League launching in 1992. As Rangers thrived under high-profile manager Graeme Souness and chairman David Murray, becoming one of the biggest and wealthiest clubs in the UK, things were moving in the opposite direction for cross-city rival Celtic. A lack of investment in a dilapidated stadium and failing squad sat in stark contrast to the Ibrox outfit, leading to the infamous term, "biscuit tin board," being coined. Celtic had been privately owned by the Kelly and White families for almost a century, prompting fans to argue the ownership structure was holding the club back. This was exacerbated by failed managerial appointments, such as trophyless former Republic of Ireland star Liam Brady, which had pushed the Parkhead club to the limit of its £5 million overdraft. Aware something needed to change, the board proposed a new stadium on the outskirts of Glasgow, in Rob Royston or Cambuslang. The proposed move came within a whisker of happening, threatening to rip Celtic out of its East End home and alter the course of the club's history forever. The early 1990s saw disgruntled Celtic fans organising into what would become one of the country's earliest and biggest grassroots fan protest groups. First, Save Our Celts, then later Celts for Change. The groups recruited huge numbers of fans into their ranks, designed to oust the old board and allow Celtic to move forward into the modern football age. Rallies were held and fans arranged boycotts of home matches. Brian Dempsey, who had been deposed from the Celtic board, became the figurehead of the campaign. "Back the team, sack the board," was the rallying cry. The most famous boycott came on March 2, 1994, when fewer than 9,000 Celtic fans attended the home match against Kilmarnock, unheard of for a club of the 1967 European Cup winner's stature. This number was significant as it was below the estimated break-even threshold for a club that could ill afford to lose any more money. By the end of March 1994, the Bank of Scotland had had enough. Celtic were given just 24 hours to find the finances to continue or be shut down for good. Enter Fergus McCann, an expat living in Canada. McCann had previously tried to invest in Celtic, but had received little interest from the board. Desperate, the board reached out to him again. McCann arrived wearing a bonnet in a flurry of publicity at Glasgow Airport. Fighting his way through the scrum of media and fans, he made his way to Celtic Park, where he and his consortium holed up with the club's board in an attempt to thrash out a deal. As the clock ticked into the early hours and fans waited on tenterhooks outside the ground for any news, the future of Celtic hung in the balance. Jordan Laird, executive producer of A View from the Terrace and co-founder of Studio Something, said, "It is always fascinating to look back at the history of football clubs and find the stories that shaped them, especially when fans are at the heart of the future of their club. We thought it was an incredible story of how basically a group of devoted fans refused to let their club go under." Speaking to Matt McGlone really brought the power of fans to the forefront of our minds. It was their pressure that really turned the club around, and it's almost unthinkable what might have been of them when you look at the size of them now. It shows the impact fans can have, whatever a club's size. As fans, we should always remember that our clubs are ours, and we can do what it takes to make sure they survive. A View from the Terrace will run on Friday nights on BBC Scotland Channel for 20 weeks and on BBC iPlayer. Report by Aidan Smith. Evening Times Sport, October 25. Green Brigade in scathing statement to Celtic Board. Report by David Irwin. A scathing Green Brigade statement has slammed the Celtic board over disingenuous claims leading to away match bans for supporters amid the row over displays of support for Palestine. Supporters previously showed support for Palestine amid the ongoing conflict with Israel. However, a Celtic statement distanced the club from the display and condemned messages of that nature being displayed at Parkhead. The supporter group then blasted the statement before members of the Green Brigade were banned from attending away matches due to very clear and extremely unsafe and unacceptable behaviour. Affected supporters were unable to attend the match away to Hearts at the weekend, with the Green Brigade suggesting the row over Palestine displays played a part in the banning order. Reports, however, claimed the ban had nothing to do with recent displays and instead comes after months of concern over behaviour at away matches. The Green Brigade fan group has now released a statement blasting the disingenuous claims over the banning order and stating no detail over process or reason for the ban has been provided. The statement shared on social media reads, "In 2016, Celtic fans faced pressure and intimidation before flying the flag for Palestine. In the aftermath, Peter Lowell advised us that we were finished. It was the only widespread positive reaction and subsequent fundraising which deterred the Celtic board from banning us. The legacy of those events is Ada Celtic, a project which we are deeply proud of, entrenches our connection with Palestine and epitomises the ethos of Celtic Football Club. Today we are in familiar territory and already being sanctioned by the board. Currently hundreds of fans are suspended from away matches due to an association with the Green Brigade. Despite receiving no correspondence, no allegations, nor any detail regarding any investigatory process. The suspension was communicated to the Green Brigade on Friday afternoon, ahead of the Hearts match on Sunday afternoon, despite alleged concerns dating back 4 weeks. In addition to this, the Green Brigade faced further restrictions at Celtic Park, designed to impede on our support and use of our standard matchday materials. We are determined to overcome these and provide full backing for the team, as always. Despite disingenuous claims, we have absolutely no doubt that these sanctions are motivated by a desire to quash political expression within the Celtic support, specifically in relation to Palestine at this time. The group then called on supporters to join a display of support for Palestine during the Champions League match against Atletico Madrid. Green Brigade members intend to distribute flags for use inside the stadium from outside the ground ahead of the match for the Fly the Flag display. The statement added, "In spite of this and any further obstruction, we once again encourage fans to courageously fly the flag for Palestine. For those unable to obtain a flag, the Green Brigade will distribute thousands of flags outside the stadium. While it would be easier to distribute flags inside, we are prohibited from bringing the flags into the stadium. We respect the right of all fans who wish not to participate in such an action. However, equally, we ask that the same respect and freedom is afforded to all fans who do." A Celtic statement on the recent ban read, "As the group in question has been informed in writing, this decision to suspend access to away tickets relates to very clear and extremely serious, unsafe and unacceptable behaviour at recent away matches, including those against Feyenoord and Motherwell. As an example, at Feyenoord, widespread and unsafe use of pyrotechnics resulted in another fine for the club from UEFA. Investigations are ongoing in relation to unsafe behaviour at Motherwell, including rushing turnstiles and forcing open fire exits to permit access to individuals without tickets." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, October 25. Sima tipped for even more Rangers goals. Report by Aidan Smith. Billy Reid has expressed his delight in seeing Abdallah Sima shine for Rangers, but he reckons there is more to come from the exciting frontman. Sima moved to Rangers on loan from Brighton in the summer and is starting to find form with 6 goals in his last 5 starts for the Ibrox club. Reid worked alongside the Senegal international at Brighton when he was assistant manager to Graham Potter during his time at the club. It has been no surprise to the former Hamilton boss to see Sima thriving, and he believes there is even more to come from the winger. Reid told The Sun, "As most people know, Brighton's recruitment policy is based on a points system, and Abdallah's attributes flagged him up to us on that. The plan when he came to the UK was always to put him out on loan to develop and get used to Britain. Even little things like getting better with the language, because his English was not great initially. It was how Brighton operated. Moises Caicedo went out on loan to a team at the bottom of the Belgian league, and he's just moved for £115 million. When Alexis McAllister joined, he stayed in Argentina with a couple of clubs before he came to Britain. Abdallah had an injury when he arrived from Slavia Prague, and for a couple of weeks he wasn't at his best. You could see the attributes he's now showing with Rangers. He was quick, strong, and could run in behind defences. But it was clear he wasn't firing on all cylinders, and when he went to Stoke he had the same problems and could not get a decent run in their team. He's a player who needs to be at his top physical level to show what he's capable of. He trained well and worked really hard in every session because he wants to do well. As a lad, he's terrific. He was one of those boys who always came in with a smile on his face. He is an infectious character, and even when his English was not great, he was always a big part of the dressing room. Now he's comfortable speaking the language, I'm sure he is popular around Ibrox. Reid also feels that Simmer has a strong mentality needed to succeed at a club like Rangers, and he reckons that will help him thrive under new manager Philippe Clement. He added, "Everyone knows it can go one of two ways in this city. You can hit the ground running and the fans take to you, or you have a hard time and you've got to win them over. I'm delighted Abdallah is getting a run of games and scoring goals. Being in the side and playing consistently will only benefit him. Going to Rangers on loan, I wondered where he'd play. He's a striker, but I think they use him coming in from the left, using his pace and power. Some of his goals have been clinical finishes. With the pace he has, he will run away from most defenders here, and he can do explosive things. I watched the Rangers game against PSV, and he had a difficult first half. You could hear the supporters getting on his back a bit, but then he got a yard of space and curled one into the top bin. That's the kind of thing he's capable of doing. He can do brilliant things. It's just about finding that level of consistency that is required at Rangers. I'm back in Scotland at the moment, and I've probably seen more of Rangers in the last 3 months than I have in the last 11 years. Everyone knows how demanding things are at the top of the Premiership. If Rangers had won the first Old Firm game of the season, then things might have turned out completely differently for Michael Beale. I saw them a couple of times towards the end of last season and thought they looked okay, but the players that have come in during the summer did not gel. He had a few injuries, and then we know what happened. It will be interesting to see how it goes under the new manager, but he's got off to a good enough start. Report by Aidan Smith. Evening Times Sport, August 26. Atletico defend Celtic kit stunt. Report by Mark Walker. Atletico Madrid president Enrique Cerezo has defended his club's decision to wear commemorative strips from the 1974 shame game and insisted they have a magnificent relationship with Celtic. The Spanish club were criticised for wearing a special strip with the exact same colours as the team that played against the Hoops in the infamous European Cup semi-final first leg of 49 years ago in Glasgow, which has gone down in history as one of the notoriously violent games in the competition after the visitors had three players sent off. Atletico added to their collection of dismissals after Argentinian star Rodrigo was sent off in this week's encounter, which finished in a 2-2 draw after Celtic had twice been pegged back. However, Cerezo insisted the club were within their rights to pay tribute to their players, who reached the European Cup final that season before losing their first of three finals, and said, "It was not a game of shame back then, and we have already played against Celtic recently. We have a magnificent relationship with Celtic. We have no problems at all. We came to Scotland to play a good game, and we tried to win the match. Celtic Park has a special place in the club's history. We played in a European Cup semi-final here. A few years ago, we also played here, and we also reached the Champions League final. We reached the European Cup Winners' Cup final too, after we played here in 1985. So we can't not get along with this club." Celtic travel to Spain for the fourth round of games in the group stages in a couple of weeks. Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport, October 26. Ewan Ferguson raring to go in Qatar Masters title defence. Report by Nick Roger. Ah, that winning feeling. I remember on the Sunday evening not sleeping a wink, reflected Ewan Ferguson, as he mulled over his maiden victory on the DP World Tour in the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters a year past March. I was just sat at the desk all night. I couldn't believe it. It sounds a bit like this tortured correspondent desperately trying to drum up an idea for my Tuesday golf column. Ferguson is back in his happy hunting ground this week to defend that title in the final regular event of the old European circuit's 2023 season. While his fellow Glaswegians, Scott Jimison and Mark Warren, face a nail-nibbling few days as they scramble to cling on to their tour cards, Ferguson has pitched up in Doha, eager for more delight in the desert. Inspiration is not hard to find. I am in the same hotel this week as last year, and coming back to the course, seeing my name there, and the pictures of me with the trophy is really cool, he added, of the fixtures and fittings that all help to boost the morale. It's quite emotional and hopefully I can play really well this week and have a chance to defend it. The way he won his first tour title will remain in his memory for a long, long time, as he conjured the kind of rousing late flourish that could have been accompanied by the 20th century Fox fanfare. I remember, with three holes to play, thinking, I'm in the top five here. It's a good chance to keep my card early in the season, recalled Ferguson, of his initial goal before his bust for the line moved, well, those goalposts. I then hit it over the back on the short par 4-16th and chipped in, tied for the lead, then holed that putt, a 15-footer, at the end. It was incredible. That's what it takes to win tournaments. You notice every week when someone wins, there's always something special that happens. That moment on 16 and the putt on the last were my moments. Ferguson has arrived in Qatar in decent fettle, having reeled off a 10th, a 9th and a 13th in three of his last four events. Being the defending champion does not faze him one bit. You guys make more of a deal of it than us, said the 27-year-old with a chuckle. When I stand over my first tee shot, I'll be thinking, where am I aiming? What am I doing? I'm not thinking, I'm defending. Ferguson, who would go on to add another tour crown to his collection in Northern Ireland later in 2022, currently sits in 43rd spot on the circuit's ranking and is set to qualify for the cash-drenched end-of-season bonanza in Dubai for the second year in a row. Having served his apprenticeship on the second-tier Challenge Tour, Ferguson finally earned promotion at the end of 2021. His subsequent acceleration to a double champion on the main tour during a thrilling rookie campaign just about left scorch marks on his clubs. I didn't think I was ready to win that early, and it all happened quite quickly for me, he said, of a rapid rise which saw him triumph in just his 37th start on the main tour. When you win, your expectations change. I finished 20th somewhere earlier this year, and went back to the range and was saying, I need to get better. But 2 years ago, I'd had been delighted with that. It's all a mindset thing. Mine is looking even further now, as for the aforementioned Warren and Jemison? Well, they both need to mount a final offensive to haul themselves inside the safety zone of the leading 116 on the rankings and preserve their playing rights for 2024. Warren, a four-time champion on the circuit down the years, is just 5 points from salvation in 117th spot, while Jemison, whose sole tour victory arrived back in 2012, is back in 119th place. The 40-year-old, who has held a tour card for 13 consecutive seasons, dropped out of the top 116 for the first time this year after a damaging missed cut in the Andalusia Masters last week. It was his 9th early exit in his last 13 events. Jemison and Warren cannot afford another premature departure in Qatar this weekend, says Nick Roger. Evening Times Sport, October 26. Laura Muir to race on home soil at World Indoor Championships. Report by Susan Egglestaff. World and Olympic medalist Laura Muir has confirmed her intention to race on home soil when the World Indoor Championships come to Glasgow in March next year. However, the 30-year-old will not race over her usual distance of 1,500 metres, but instead will contest the 3,000 metres at the three-day event, which begins on March 1. Despite the majority of her silverware being in the shorter distance of 1,500 metres, Muir is no stranger to success in the 3,000 metres, having twice won European indoor gold at the distance in 2017 and 2019, with the latter having been won at Glasgow's Emirates Arena, where the 2024 World Indoors will also take place. Muir's primary target next year will be Olympic success, with Paris 2024 beginning next July. But the Dundee Hawkhill runner admitted the pull of the home crowd was one of the deciding factors in her electing to include the World Indoor Championships on her racing programme for next year. I am delighted to confirm that racing at the World Indoor Championships held in Glasgow in March is in my plans, said Muir, who is now based in Loughborough, having started working with new coach Steve Vernon earlier this year. Obviously, it is an Olympic year, and there will be a huge focus on Paris in terms of our training camps and race plans. But after thinking it through, me and my coach felt that Glasgow 2024 was too good an opportunity to miss. I feel incredibly lucky to have been able to compete at a Commonwealth and European level championship in Scotland before, so cannot wait to add a global competition to the list. It is a home championship once again, and I like nothing better than racing in front of a packed Scottish crowd at the Emirates Arena. Glasgow 2019 and winning both the 1500 metres and the 3,000 metres titles that weekend remains one of the best memories in my career. I am excited at the thought of racing there again in front of family and friends. Looking at the schedules for the week and linking in with wider plans around that point of the year, we have decided the 3,000 metres will work best for me. I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully a few top Scots can make the Great Britain and Northern Ireland team. Also likely to be in action in Glasgow next year are World and Olympic 800-metre finalist Gemma Rieke and European indoor 1500-metre silver medalist Neil Gourlay. Report by Susan Egglestaff. Evening Times Sport, October 26. Sutton on missing former Celtic star. Report by Aidan Smith. Chris Sutton reckons Celtic are missing a striker of Georgios Giakoumakis' quality to back up starman Kyogo. The Greek international left the Hoops at the beginning of 2023 after becoming frustrated with a lack of game time under the leadership of Ange Postecoglou. Giakoumakis was mainly utilised from the bench for Celtic, but despite the lack of minutes, he still produced plenty of goals at key moments for his side. Sutton reckons Brendan Rodgers' side are missing that impact from the bench this season, and he believes if they had that sort of firepower on the sidelines, then Celtic could have already picked up more points in the Champions League this season. He wrote on Twitter, "We shouldn't look back, but I miss Giakoumakis, and so do Celtic." On the match, Sutton said, "Tremendous first half from Celtic, but ran out of steam. Not enough belief and bravery in possession in the second half. Brendan not throwing O on tells its own story. Maida not clean enough with his link-up as a central striker. Atletico really excellent." Report by Aidan Smith. Evening Times Sport, October 27. Hodgson on Celtic Champions League expectation amid Postecoglou praise. Report by Aidan MacDonald. Roy Hodgson reckons one of the reasons Ange Postecoglou has been able to adapt seamlessly to life in England is due to his experience with Celtic in the Champions League. Tottenham currently sit top of the Premier League, with the Australian undefeated in his first 9 games, and ahead of Spurs taking on Crystal Palace. Hodgson insists it has not been a surprise to him that the 58-year-old has taken the division by storm. When asked about Postecoglou adapting to the Premier League, he responded, "It depends on what you mean by adaptation to the Premier League. I think needing time to adapt to the Premier League is more relevant to players than coaches or managers. I think sometimes they do, especially when they come from a different country, come from abroad, a totally different culture, because of the intensity of the Premier League, the fierceness, the lack of time and space that there's for you, and the physicality. That can be very different to a player. Coming from Celtic, playing in front of 60,000 or 70,000 people every week, being in the Champions League, coaching Australia, being at the very best club in Japan, I don't need if you need a lot of adaptation to come to the Premier League. He might have been a bit of an unknown or a surprise to a lot of people in the country, but he certainly was no surprise to me." Report by Aidan MacDonald. Evening Times Sport, October 27. Martinez Losa insists Scotland can be encouraged by recent games. Report by Alison McConnell. Scotland will draw on the encouragement of recent performances as they look to take something from their Nations League doubleheader against the Netherlands, according to Pedro Martinez Losa. A sellout crowd of 14,000 is expected for the first of these games tonight, with the odds of Scotland claiming their first Nations League win not particularly inviting. The Dutch, who were put out of this summer's World Cup at the quarter-final stage to eventual winner Spain, can welcome their all-time top scorer Vivian Medema back from a long-term ACL injury. Martinez Loza has pointed to the steady progression of Scotland women in recent months as scope for optimism but the loss of Real Madrid midfielder Caroline Weir is a serious handicap. With Sam Kerr and Emma Watson also out, while Erin Cuthbert may return only for the game in Glasgow on Tuesday night, it is a considerable ask for Scotland to take anything. The Spaniard said, "In terms of the development, it is always good to be tested against the best. We have a constant trajectory that we analyse, and our performances have been fairly consistent. We have confidence in the team that we have developed, and we have confidence we can do it in the next two games. It is complicated that we are in the toughest group, but we have proved in recent games that we can compete. It is an exciting challenge for the next two matches." Cuthbert could be expected to assume some of the leadership responsibilities in the absence of Weir. The Chelsea midfielder's combativeness and industry could be key for Scotland as they navigate the next 9 months or so as Weir recuperates. Cuthbert picked up a niggle on Sunday on her quad. However, there is optimism that she can make Tuesday's game at Hampden. And Martinez Lopez said, "The plan is going well, and we hope that she will be back for Tuesday. We don't know for sure yet. We are developing a strong mentality as a group so that we can cope when we are without players. There is a positive and a negative in every situation, and we always try to find the positive. When others are out, there is an opportunity for someone else to come in. But it is fair to say that there are players who do give you something extra. It would be fantastic to have Erin available for the first match." Report by Alison McConnell. Evening Time Sport, October 27. Sparta Prague Star on two Rangers players. Report by Mark Walker. Sparta Prague hitman Jan Kuchta insists only an inspired Jack Butland prevented them from beating Rangers in the Europa League. The Ibrox side claimed a respectable goalless draw in the Czech Republic, although they had to rely on their keeper making a string of fine saves in the first half in particular. Czech international striker Kucha was guilty of missing chances, and he is expecting an intense atmosphere at Ibrox in the return game, having previously only witnessed an empty stadium, having played there when he was at rivals Slavia Prague in the infamous Europa League tie in 2021, where former Rangers star Glenn Kamara was racially abused. He said, "The feeling after that is disappointment. When you get to this stage, you play teams who have high quality players and have goalkeepers in the team to make saves. Unfortunately for us, the Rangers keeper made a lot of good saves, but we also have to take our share of the blame for poor finishing. We actually hit a few shots straight at him. At least we created chances. Rangers had one clear chance towards the end when we had a lapse, and also we opened the game because if you want to win the game, you have to take risks. I expect a similar game in Glasgow. I played at Ibrox Stadium when there were no fans there. It will be a stormy atmosphere, but we have to deal with it if we want to progress. We believe we are going in the right direction and will get enough points to advance." And Kuchta was also impressed with Rangers former Slavia Prague star Abdella Sima. He said, "I enjoy seeing him. He also made progress at Rangers, and he is finally healthy and fully fit. He has done well with Rangers by scoring goals and making assists. He is an intelligent player." Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport, October 27. Motherwell fans right to be excited by return of Beereth. Report by Graeme McGarry. even off the back of four defeats, and the last one being a truly abysmal affair. The postponement of the St Johnstone game last week, hot on the heels of an international break, has left Motherwell fans champing at the bit for the return of their team to action. On the plus side though, the absence of club football has not only allowed Hearts to grow fonder, but it has afforded key players the time to get back up to fitness, with Callum Butcher getting another week of training and a bounce game under his belt over the past few days. The return of his composure to the defence will be most welcome, as will, and I mean this in the most complimentary way, his nasty streak. Call it a will to win, call it what you will, but you get the feeling Butcher would two-foot his own granny if it meant he would earn 3 points for his team. This Motherwell side are full of nice guys and really good technical footballers, and while I'm not suggesting that Butcher isn't also these things, there is little doubt that he also balances that out by being a bit of a on the pitch too, a quality that should not be underestimated. Another who is no shrinking violet on the field is Mika Biereth, and with the greatest of respect for Butcher, it is fair to say that it is the return of the on-loan Arsenal striker that has pulses racing a little bit faster among the fans. Having been stung before by flash-in-the-pan forwards who did not quite live up to early expectations, you can almost sense a reluctance among the Fir Park faithful to get too carried away by the prospective impact of the 20-year-old on their team. But that stunning debut cameo off the bench against Hibs, where he terrorised their defence, setting up the equaliser for Connor Wilkinson and scoring the winner, was a tantalising glimpse of his potential as a game-changer. The departure of Kevin Van Veen has meant that for all the qualities of this Motherwell team, it has lacked that little bit of stardust in attack, and Biereth may just be the man to fill the Dutchman's considerable boots. Football is all about dreaming, so while manager Stuart Kettlewell will not thank me for saying this as he tries to temper expectations on the young forward, I am fully on board the Biereth bus as the vehicle to correct the course of Motherwell's season. Report by Graham McGarry. Evening Times Sport, October 27. Merton Council approves Wimbledon expansion plans. Wimbledon's bold expansion plans have been approved by Merton Council following a lengthy planning committee meeting which concluded just after midnight. A 524-page document had already been published by the council, which concluded planning permission should be granted, subject to conditions, because of the substantial public benefits of the proposal outweighing harm to the significance of heritage assets. The All England Club bought the lease of the neighbouring Wimbledon Park Golf Club for a reported £65 million in 2018. Across the site, which includes Wimbledon Park Lake and a section of Church Road, the AELTC was seeking the go-ahead to build 38 new courts, including a third show court with a capacity of 8,000 seats and a retractable roof, as well as designated north and south player hubs, while also providing publicly accessible parkland. Under the proposals, originally submitted in 2021, the grounds will almost triple in size and allow Wimbledon to host the qualifying tournaments in SW19 rather than their current home, a couple of miles away in Roehampton. Completion is projected for 2030, which will see an increase in the capacity of the championships from 42,000 to 50,000, and also deliver benefits relating to heritage, open space, recreation and community. The ambitious scheme, though, has not gone down well with some local residents. Around 2,000 trees are expected to be removed across some 75 acres of metropolitan open land, which is intended to be protected as an area of landscape, recreation, nature conservation, or scientific interest. A petition to save Wimbledon Park showed more than 13,000 signatures, and there were protests from opposition groups outside the Development and Planning Applications Committee meeting at Merton Civic Centre. Chaired by Labour and Cooperative Party Councillor Aidan Mundy, the committee heard a number of arguments on both sides, including from the All England Club, local residents, council officers, and Wimbledon MP Stephen Hammond, which took in environmental, social, and economic considerations during a lengthy meeting which lasted for almost 5 hours. A final vote eventually came at just after midnight, which saw the recommendation for planning permission to be granted passed by 6-4. Following the announcement, someone shouted a protest, apparently from the public seats, with Councillor Mundy asking the person to leave the room and calling for security before the meeting was adjourned. The proposals will now move on to the next stage of the planning process, with London Mayor Sadiq Khan required to formally accept or reject the decision due to the development taking place on metropolitan open land. As the northernmost part of Wimbledon Park is within the borough of Wandsworth, the scheme must also be approved by its planning committee. There is also the possibility of judicial review as a potential obstacle for the development proceeding. Local residents who oppose the decision could attempt to challenge the lawfulness of the way it was made on the grounds of illegality, procedural unfairness, or irrationality. A spokesperson for the London Borough of Merton said, "After considering the officer's report, relevant submissions, and the relevant planning framework, the Independent Planning Committee, made up of councillors from all parties, voted to approve the application. There are further stages in the planning process, and the land remains subject to covenants contained in the transfer of 1993 from the council to AELTG. Until these covenants are properly addressed by AELTG, they operate to restrict the use and development of the land as proposed in the planning application." News of the vote was met with disappointment by the Wimbledon Park Residents Association, and their chair said, "We are not at all surprised by the outcome of the vote. Most of the inconsistencies in the report were glossed over. Merton did not even bring their own experts into the hearing and instead relied on the applicant to advise the councillors who were asking the questions. In addition, their pronouncements on the environment still ignored their own expert advice where it did not suit them. On all that was said about the stadium and the buildings, these are still in outline, and outline designs on protected land contravene their own planning regulations. They therefore cannot be discussed in any meaningful way. This is just a stage in what will be a long process for which Save Wimbledon Park is well prepared."
From the Glasgow Times, Sunday the 29th of October, from the sports section, Clermont pleased with Rangers' resilience and dramatic win over Hearts. Article by Martin McMillan. Philip Clermont believes his Rangers side answered his questions about their mettle in the last gasp 2-1 win over Hearts, which cut Celtic's lead in the Cinch Premiership Summit to 5 points. Jambos captain Lauren Shanklin gave the visitors the lead after 5 minutes, before home skipper James Taverney smacked the post with a penalty at the end of the first half, after Toby Sibbick's fell on Todd Cantwell. Gerrards midfielder Nicholas Raskin was taken off from the field in a stretcher after sustaining an injury in shooting after the break, but the game ended on a high for the Light Blues under the tutelage of Clement for the third time. The hosts were awarded a second spot kick in the 90th minute for a Peter Haring foul on Conor Goldson after a VAR check by referee John Beaton, and this time Taverney slammed it in, with substitute Danilo completing the turnaround by heading home the winner in the third of the 9 added minutes. I am curious if there comes a moment, and it always comes, where the scenario is not going our way, how they would react, Clement said after the match. Clearly, they had the reaction that I wanted. Our strength needs to be that whatever happens in football, we never give up and we keep on repeating what we are doing, because they are doing already good things together. Of course, we need to still make better a lot of details, but if we show the right mentality over and over again in every action and in the reaction afterwards, then we are a really good team. That is what we showed together, not with 11 but with the whole squad, also the players who came in to give this energy. The Belgian continued, was it perfect? No. But for me, it is a reference game in the way they have seen, if they never give up, a lot of good things can happen. It is not a guarantee that you win every game, because not even the best teams in the world manage to do that, but we are going to win much more games than we have done until now. It is a big step forward for me, and, in that way, Tav was an example today. Missing the penalty, getting the stick because of that, that moment you can lose confidence, you can go down, you can stop taking responsibility. But he took the second penalty, he scored it, and afterwards he gave the assist for the second goal. I want to see a lot of players with that mentality in my dressing room. And the article was by Martin McMillan. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 28th of October, from the sports section, Hibs 0, Celtic 0. Instant reaction to the burning issues. Article by Graham McGarry. Hibernian held Celtic to a goalless draw at Easter Road, with the leggy champions miles from their best for the most part after their midweek Champions League exertions. Martin Boyle should have scored for the hosts, while James Forrest rattled the crossbar for the visitors, but a point apiece was probably about right in the end. Here are the talking points from Leaf. Lack of trust in fringe players results in sluggish sales. The opening 45 minutes of this game felt like one of those Sunday lunchtime kickoffs that never quite get going. The football was flat, so too subsequently was the atmosphere, with passes going astray and nothing much happening for either side in an attacking sense. Celtic, at least, had the excuse of the energy they expended in that pulsating draw with Atletico Madrid on Wednesday night, which made it a little surprising that manager Brendan Rodgers made just the one enforced change, with Paul Bernardo replacing Rio Hatate, just as he had done in the 7th minute of that game. Their lethargy continued into the second half, with Liam Scales and Cameron Carter-Vickers both passing the ball directly out the park under no pressure, in quick succession. Hibs smelled blood, and more slack play from Celtic saw Matt O'Reilly, of all people, play a loose pass into his own area to present the host with an opportunity that was spurned. Rodgers had seen enough, and used up his remaining 4 substitutions by the hour mark as he tried to shake some life into his team, with even the lesser spotted Mikey Johnson getting a run out. Eventually, they started to assert some pressure in the Hibs box, with Forrest rattling the crossbar from close range, and Hibs being forced into some heroic last-ditch defending. But the fact that Rodgers didn't trust his squad players enough to start this match might hint that he feels that there's a lack of real quality on the fringes of this Celtic team. Montgomery sticks to his guns. One can imagine Nick Montgomery cutting a Mike Bassick-esque figure as he proclaimed in the Hibernian dressing room on the morning of this game that his side will be playing a 4-4 if Bassick deleted 2. The Hibs manager made some changes to his personnel from the hammering at the Ibrox last week, with Rocky Bashiri coming in for Paul Hanlon and Jared Tavares coming in for Adam Lafondre, but the shape and intent remained the same. He was sticking to his guns. It almost backfired on a few occasions though. If we're being polite, some of the Hibs players are clearly still getting used to their new manager's approach, and slack passing out so Jimmy Jago slip and present a chance to Callum McGregor. David Marshall saved their blushes. When it came off though, you could see the value in what Montgomery is trying to do. A pass from Marshall out to Jordan Obita allowed the fullback the space to whip a beautiful ball into the area that evaded scales and landed perfectly for Boyle as he steamed into the 6-yard box. The attacker opened his foot just a little too much though, and managed to scoop the ball high and wide of goal when it looked easier to score. Alistair Johnson injury concern. The Canadian fullback's head is probably still wobbling after they take a cleanse from Rocky Bashiri flushing his face from off a couple of yards during the first half. He went down like a sack of spuds and remained there for several minutes as he received attention from the medical staff. It was somewhat surprising when he groggily stepped back onto the pitch in an attempt to continue and, sure enough, just a few minutes later he went to the ground once more and Anthony Ralston was sent on in his stead as he staggered off. If it is a concussion, questions will be raised over just why he was allowed to continue, but at least Ralston and the is on hand as an able deputy. Lewis Palmer frustrates. It is perhaps harsh to single any one Celtic player out for criticism on a day when so many of them were below par, but Palmer was particularly wasteful on the ball, with nothing coming off for the Honduran whatsoever. He does of course have a little credit in the bank after a largely impressive start to his Celtic career, not least because of his brilliantly taken goal against Atletico during the week. He was a long, long way from those levels here though, and it was no surprise to see him hooked just after an hour for Johnson. Could Johnson seize chance? Not quite. In fairness to the winger, his only real action of late has come in the cause of his country, with the 24-year-old making a decent impact on his first few appearances for the Republic of Ireland. He almost got the breakthrough here as he ghosted inside and played a 1-2 that allowed him to get a shot away towards the top corner, but Marshall clawed it out to deny him. That was about as good as it got for him though, with veteran Forrest making the greater impact from the other wing. And that article was by Graham McGarry.
Evening Times Sport, October 30. Celtic deepen feeder club relationship. Report by Mark Walker. Celtic feeder club Admira Vakar have revealed a club delegation held talks with Hoops boss Brendan Rodgers last week on a visit to Glasgow. The Scottish champions have established a link-up with the modelling side, who have been Austrian champions 9 times, but are currently sitting in mid-table in the second tier of the Austrian Bundesliga. Celtic have already loaned Scotland under-21's international defender Matthew Anderson and goalkeeper Toby Oluwayeme to them this season. And a representation from the club met with Rodgers and Celtic officials before attending the Champions League draw with Atletico Madrid. Admira Vakar sports director Peter Stodger said, "It is about us having discussions about how we can continue to develop cooperation between the clubs. We look for win-win situations where everyone benefits, and Celtic are really very interested in the partnership. There is a good chance we can expand that partnership, but it will not happen overnight. We also had a meeting with Brendan Rodgers. The Atletico game was fantastic, and Celtic Park is definitely one of the best stadiums in Europe, with an incredible atmosphere." Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport, October 30. Rangers match winner Danilo praises mental coach. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Rangers match winner Danilo has thanked the sports psychologist he consulted after suffering his horror face injury against St. Johnson last month, for helping him get back to his very best after netting a dramatic injury time goal in the Sinj Premiership encounter with Hearts. Brazilian forward Danilo came off the bench at the start of the second half in the top flight encounter with Stephen Naismith's side at Ibrox and rounded off a spirited fight back when he nodded home a James Tavernier cross in the third minute of added on time. The improbable triumph. Philippe Clement's team had been trailing 1-0 with 3 minutes of regulation time left on the clock, ensured the hosts cut Celtic's lead at the top of the league to just 5 points, with 28 games of the 23-24 campaign still remaining. Danilo, who is still wearing a protective mask and attempting to get himself back to full fitness, is grateful for the support which he received from the mental coach he went to after being hospitalised in the Premiership win at McDermott Park at the start of September. But the 24-year-old, a £5.6 million signing from Dutch club Feyenoord during the summer, reckons the dramatic Hearts win showed the steely resolve that exists within the Rangers squad, and he is optimistic that good times lie ahead because of that. He said, "It was a special night for us. I'm just glad we've got the 3 points at home. Getting that late goal was a signal for us. It shows our spirit and the character that we have. The game lasts 90 minutes, but we didn't give up. As a team, we did a really great job to get the 3 points. It is just amazing to hear the fans appreciate you and sing a song for you. It shows that we fight and have the spirit. So bringing the fans behind us is just amazing. It's just great to play for this club. We're taking it step by step. We did great today and also in the last two games. So we'll look to the next game and see what happens." That's what the coach has said. He wants us to go week by week, month by month. We are looking forward to our next game already, and hopefully we'll get the 3 points again. The spirit of the group is great. We're just trying to keep making each other feel positive. You know, with our qualities, we can make it happen. I think Tavernier today did a brilliant job. He scored the penalty and gave the final assist for my header. So the mentality of the group is great. We're just trying to keep that belief in each other, no matter who starts and who is on the bench. The group is amazing. The gaffer told us at halftime that if we keep believing in ourselves, we can do it. We thank the fans for staying behind us too. They kept pushing us on, and thankfully, we did it for them. When I wear the mask, it's like a totally different guy. I really like it just now. I just like to thank the doctors because they did a great job. Will I keep on wearing it on my face when I don't need to? I'm too handsome. I also have a mental coach who helps me every Tuesday. When I had my surgery, I knew my moment would come. I was keeping in touch with the doctor every day. She encouraged me to make duels. She knew this moment would happen, and then it would be about my reaction. I just kept myself positive, and I think that helped me a lot. During training, it's something different, but in the games you get adrenaline. I don't know how long I'll keep wearing the mask. The mental coach has helped me a lot. It's changed my mentality since I had the surgery on my face. She just kept telling me to feel brave and believe in myself. I'm glad that I'm scored again with my head, because she was saying to keep remembering that the last time I scored, it was with my head. I also had a mental coach before in Holland who helped me with a lot of situations. It's great to have one. It helps to clear your head. If you have some problems, then there is someone to share, even though you have a wife. I'm really happy to have someone to help me after my surgery. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, October 30. Glasgow Warriors. Matthews on Crazy Summer. Report by Ewan Booth-Robertson. It was a summer of love for Johnny Matthews in his professional and private life, as he experienced a whirlwind few months. Matthews tied the knot in July and enjoyed his honeymoon before a memorable phone call arrived while in East Nuke. The phone reception in Ely was unreliable as Matthews walked his dog, but the message was heard loud and clear from Scotland forward coach John Dalziel. The uncapped Matthews received his first international call-up due to Scotland's wretched injury issues at hooker, with Dave Cherry, Fraser Brown and Stuart McInally all sustaining problems in France. Within 12 hours, Matthews linked up with Gregor Townsend's squad, and he became Scotland's first World Cup debutant since Josh Stouse in 2015, when he was introduced against Romania. It was already a dream summer for the 30-year-old, and the icing on the cake arrived 13 minutes into his debut, when he surged over the line to score. Matthews recalls, "Yes, I was kind of here, there and everywhere this summer. I was in here for 2 weeks, out there for 2 weeks, back in here. I'm loving being back. I didn't have much time to think about going to the World Cup, as it was less than 12 hours from the phone call to me landing in Nice. It was a whirlwind, but one that I absolutely loved. Sometimes I had to pinch myself, to be fair. There was no real build-up for me. It was a kind of, you're needed, you're out, and you're playing in 6 days. It was one of the best experiences of my life, and building up from a fantastic summer, it kind of really capped it off for me, no pun intended. The World Cup ended in disappointment for Scotland as they failed to navigate through the group of death after defeats to Ireland and South Africa. Townsend's squad was littered with Glasgow stars, and Matthews earned the acclaim of his teammates on his return to Scotstoun, which has left him eyeing a Six Nations place. Yes, Matthews replied when asked if he received a nice reception on his return. Like I said, it wasn't really kind of that long, but I got loads of really nice messages from all the lads. When I came back in, everyone was made up for me, as we were for Stafford McDowell when he got his first cap against Italy. We're just happy for boys to see them get to a stage where, you know, staff has worked really hard to get to that point and deserved it for some time. If I stay in this Glasgow squad and play well here, then I've got every chance of getting into the Six Nations squad. But I take each game at a time. So I think it's one game at a time. We've got 10 massive games before the end of the year. The first one has just gone, so we take each one of them as they come. Evening Times Sport, October 30. Stephen Naismith rages over VAR call. Report by Johnny McFarlane. Stephen Naismith has blasted referee John Beaton and VAR Alan Muir for awarding Rangers a penalty late on in Hearts 2-1 defeat at Ibrox. Beaton waved play on after Peter Haring pulled Conor Goldson's shirt in the box as a corner came in, but the incident was flagged by the officials in the VAR room. And once Beaton saw the video monitor, he quickly pointed to the spot, giving Rangers a way back into the game at 1-0 to the Edinburgh side. However, Naismith insists there was an infringement before the shirt pull that renders it irrelevant and that a major error was made. He told the BBC, "The penalty is a defining moment in the game. It's not a penalty. The VAR is here to stop things happening. Throughout the whole game, we highlighted there was clear blocking going on in the box, where the players were not interested in the ball. They are looking at our men, blocking our players, when I was then told that if that happens and they score from it, I was told it would be brought back and given as a foul. The penalty they get, the initial contact is made by a player blocking our player, which VAR should go and look at. I spoke to the referee after, and he said that he wasn't shown any images where there was a block. So I don't know whether there's a miscommunication or what the process is, but ultimately it's failed us. It is a clear block on our player. It's as simple as that. As the ball comes into the box, our player is marking the opposition player. He's meant to. And a Rangers player comes in and blocks him out of the way. What happens next is irrelevant. That's the foul. And what gives the Rangers player an edge on our player? Simple as that. The outcome of the game is defined by the penalty. It changes everything. We were defending comfortably. The penalty changes the whole dynamic of the whole game. 100% it does. Small details happen that ultimately cost us today. Report by Johnny McFarlane. Evening Times Sport, October 30. Glasgow pair meet in the Scottish Cup after the third draw was made in Glasgow. Former Scotland captain Scott Brown returned to Hampden Park to make the draw for the third round of the Scottish Gas Men's Scottish Cup. Brown also admitted while he was at the draw that he was looking forward to returning to football management and that he had itchy feet. The full draw is Albion Rovers versus Bonnyrigg Rose, Annan Athletic versus Dumbarton, Barora Rangers versus Pollock, Broxburn Athletic versus Bucky Thistle, Cumnock Juniors versus Broomhill, Dunbar United versus Alloa, Dunfermline Athletic versus Raith Rovers, Falkirk versus Fourmartin United, Morton versus Lunkerty or Bowness United, Hamilton versus Kelty Hearts, Inverness Caledonian Thistle versus Cowdenbeath, Montrose versus Edinburgh City, Musselburgh Athletic or Clyde versus Jeanfield Swifts, Partick Thistle versus Queen's Park, Peterhead versus Ayr United, Queen of the South versus Dundee United, Stirling Albion versus Cove Rangers, Stranraer versus Airdrie, the Spartans versus Arbroath, Tranent versus Forfar.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at QN Review and to tell your friends about our service.